Técnica.
Hola, ¿qué tal? ¿Cómo están? Bienvenidos a Light. En esta ocasión, en este segundo capítulo de nuestro podcast, tuvimos la oportunidad de platicar con Gerard Regan, que es el Regional Sales Manager de Mesa Coptonics. Para nosotros como distribuidores, son personas claves en la relación que tenemos entre los clientes y el fabricante de los equipos. Gerard, en esta plática que tuvimos, nos explica un poco cuáles son sus funciones, también cómo está organizado Mesa Coptonics en Estados Unidos, qué tipo de tecnología tenemos en el mercado y cuál es la que sigue. Platicamos un poquito de cada uno de estos temas. Y también tuve la oportunidad de compartir con ustedes algunas experiencias que le ha tocado a él vivir en México cuando nosotros vamos a ver a algunos clientes, darle seguimiento a algunos clientes. Y la verdad, hay algunas cosas que me parecieron muy divertidas de compartir. Espero que él opine lo mismo. Pero bueno, sin más, espero que disfruten también de este capítulo. Como les decía en un inicio, cada uno es muy distinto. La verdad es que eso nos parece más divertido. En esta ocasión hablaremos de Mesa. No sé si muchos lo sepan, pero ya llevan 103 años en el mercado. Y la verdad creo que hay mucho, mucho, mucho que aprender y conocer. Muchísimas gracias. Gracias por acompañarnos. Hello, Gerard.
Hello.
Again in Mexico. How do you feel?
Feel great. It's always good coming down here to Mexico. Haven't been able to come in a while because COVID and travel restrictions. And
actually, we were together the last time you were in Mexico here in Guadalajara. And I remember that we were talking about that terrible thing that was coming from China.
Yeah.
It was the last meeting that we had without being worried about wearing a mask.
Right, right.
I know that for people who's watching us, both we are vaccinated right now, and so we know that we have been careful with that. But new times, I guess, new reality. But thank you so much for being in Mexico to come. I know that we have been trying to schedule visits to Mexican customers to follow up. And I know that our customers already know what do you do, but I want just to ask you, and if you can explain to our viewers, what do you do at Mesa? What's like first, maybe what's your name, and what do you do? What's your position, and what do you do at Mesa Coptonics?
Sure. So my name's Jared Regan. I'm the Southwest Regional Sales Manager. So as the name implies, I spend a lot of time in sales, introducing our customers to new products that Mesa has to offer to help grow their businesses. That's really the main thing, is having that consultative approach and figuring out their business, what their processes are, and finding the right piece of technology to help them grow. But I would say most of my time is spent on the other side of it, after the sale, following up, making sure they have training, making sure they have proper support from Mesa, and just checking in and making sure we maintain good relationships. So I've got a full team around me to support me with that.
Sure.
But it's still a main focus of mine to do that.
So every time that a customer, a Mexican customer, is maybe, when are like the situations when they need to contact you? Like,
yeah. So if it's a customer, it's different for everyone. You know, I would prefer that customers call me anytime they need anything at all. You know, and not feel that it's bothering me or whatever the case might be, because we do have different people within the company tasked with certain responsibilities. But my responsibility is everything, to catch all those things and make sure that customers are taken care of all the way around.
Right, because we know that, and actually we are going to put maybe your email address in this video, mm-hmm. but they know that at Mesa there are many different departments for everything. Like if we have an apps department, so if a customer needs to cut, or they have some questions about how to cut a material better, with better quality, better something, and maybe if they need service, right? So we know that there are special people to follow up that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you are kind of the point of entry for maybe helping and following all these things for customers, right? So
everything exactly. happens in the right way and in the right speed, maybe?
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah, I feel like I'm kind of the go-to bridge for all those different departments.
So you're actually the one, the guy pulling the strings?
I wouldn't say that. That's my boss pulling the strings. So, but no, I can definitely, if a customer needs something expedited or whatever the case is, you know, I can definitely step in and make sure that they're properly supported in applications issues, service issues, whatever it is.
Yeah, most of the people don't know, but you have been for how long coming to Mexico? Maybe two years?
Yeah, 2.5, going on 3 years.
Yeah, so of course, COVID thing, COVID messed up with everything.
Right.
We have to stop for a little bit, but now we are retaking the visits to customers to follow up and all that. So now we are again in Guadalajara.
Yeah.
Guadalajara. So I know you like the city, right?
Yeah, yeah, city's great. Great atmosphere, great people, great weather. Every time I come here, the weather's great. Sure. I think we were in January, here in January last time. And
last time, yeah.
You know, it was like 75 degrees, so.
Yeah,
it's very nice. Yeah, it's very nice here.
For most of the people, they don't know, but I know that you have already like a master's degree in drinking some mezcal and tequila.
I'm working on it.
Oh.
I'm in my apprenticeship. You've taught me quite a bit. So.
I know you have a very good student, I have to say that. You are up to everything to try. There's maybe most of the people don't know this, but there was one time, if you remember, that we were in Mexico City and we went to a bar. I think it was
Here we go.
We went to a bar. It was a Japanese style bar. Tachinomides was.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that one.
So you need, it was funny because, and I knew that was very significant to me because it was your first time in Mexico. And I'm there with you, and I was like wondering. It was the first actually meetings that we have in Mexico, and we went out after looking for some customers just to have a chat. So we went to this place, and the bartender offered us to have some like a special. And something like what's the name for cómo se llaman esas las hormigas chicatanas,
the Japanese hot dogs.
Yeah, the Japanese style hot dog come with a mayo made of a chicatana. It's like an insect.
Yeah,
but it was just the heads.
Yeah. They were ant heads ground up in mayonnaise.
And the guy, I remember that he asked, like, you want to try? I have tried that before. For me, it was, you know, we eat a lot of stuff in Mexico that's maybe not so.
I don't know. You didn't try any that night. I thought maybe you were a little scared of it.
I was just testing you. Of course. I have done that. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Why not? I mean, right.
Okay. But I guess I believe you.
But I dare you to, I challenge you to try it, and you didn't blink. You were like up to it, and you were like 100%. And then it's when I understood this guy is committed, 100% of Mexico. So you did
it. You gotta take it all in, absorb the culture.
Yeah, of course. It sounds a little bit weird, but actually that showed me that how you are open to experience being in another country and the culture and how do we work and all that. So that meant a lot to me outside the funny part of it, that story, but you didn't have any consequences of it, right? You were okay with your stomach and...
No, yeah, I was no consequences. I made it out of there alive, so
just
all was good.
Some other people not from Mexico want to try, you're safe with that. So
it's good mayonnaise.
But I know. So after spending some visits to Mexican customers, what do you think about Mexican industry versus the U.S. industry?
Well, being here, I would say there are a lot more similarities than differences. I mean, at the end of the day, you've got companies making a product, trying to get that product out the door. Or company making a product and they're outsourcing that to a company that's trying to get it out the door for them.
Right.
But it's same dynamic everywhere you go. I would say here in Mexico, there's a lot more probably lower tier machines entering the market and stuff like that. Just because of the price points, they're more attractive. Won't say anything negative about those machines, but
sure.
You know, there's pros and cons to everything.
Sure.
And I think, you know, my job is to, again, identify and try to provide a solution for the customer with our technology. And we have a pretty big portfolio to be able to do that more times than not.
So you are trying not to talk bad about Chinese or Turkish machines?
Right, because you have to respect our customers, and everyone has a different business philosophy, and there's no one perfect philosophy or no one, you know. So I try to be respectful of that, and, you know, our competitors as well. But at the end of the day, there are pros and cons to our machines, to a competitor's machines, and those, they're different. And it's my job to kind of communicate that. Sticking primarily to our equipment is my focus. But yeah, the market here, I think, is a really good market. It seems to be rebounding pretty strongly right now from COVID.
Yeah.
Things are picking up. Things are looking great. I was just at FabTech. What was that, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And probably had more, you know, leads for Mexico than in years past.
That was a surprise. Yeah. That was a surprise.
Yeah, so...
But that's actually a good sign, right? I mean, for everybody. Like, the industry's recovering and getting there.
Yeah.
I know that... We know that it's a different reality, but we are getting there. So actually, that was a good thing to see at the show.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think that we have our opportunities to grow, like our industry in Mexico?
I think for years, Mexico has had this big advantage of labor and being able to just have more manpower to get the job done. The problem is that the rest of the world is now automating their solutions. So the labor part of the equation is going away.
Right.
You know, so I think there's room for opportunity there with Mexican companies that they can automate to reduce those labor costs. Even though the labor might be less, they can still reduce that cost and be more profitable. Also, I've noticed nitrogen costs here in Mexico.
Yes.
Are just sky high.
How much is in the U.S.? Like cubic? You guys, it's not our thing. It's your mm-hmm. fault. You guys are backwards. Still with the not metric system. Like you have the inches.
In feet.
Right. So yeah. I like, always is weird. But you know kind of the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
How much is a cubic meter of nitrogen in the U.S. average?
So in the U.S., we go based on 100 cubic feet. So nitrogen is, you know, anywhere from 80 cents, if they have a really good deal, to, you know, $1.30 per 100 cubic feet. That translates to Mexico per 100 cubic feet. Instead of 90 cents to $1.30, you're looking at $6.
Yeah,
I've seen as high as $8, $10.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I'm looking at this, and I'm seeing this and saying, there's no way that it costs the nitrogen company this much more to generate it here in Mexico. There's no explaining that. And it's really not fair to the customers here in Mexico paying for nitrogen. I don't understand how companies have been competitive cutting with nitrogen.
That's why we are not growing.
Yeah, that's why I think you see a lot more low-power machines here. They don't use as much nitrogen, stuff like that. As you go up into higher power, the thickness that you can cut with nitrogen goes up, so your volume goes up with that. And what we've provided is a solution with high-pressure air cutting. In the U.S. last year, we sold high-pressure air probably with about 60% of our machines.
Really?
Yes. And that's so with that.
From, like, example, 10 machines, 6 of those machines are with cutting with air.
Right.
Since the project started, because... Maybe customers don't know, but now we are offering the air systems included if the customer wants it mm-hmm. with the laser, right? We sell
right.
the whole package.
Right, right. And we do that because we don't want to... We develop the technology to cut with air, but then you also have to generate that air. We don't want to say, hey, here's a technology customer. Go find a compressor and put it together and make it work. No, because 9 times out of 10 when that happens, it's not spec'd for the right dew point. It's not... it's not the right flow for our machines. It's not being filtered properly. And all the air is going right into the optics of the machine. So it has to be properly spec'd so that it performs at the level that it should per MASAC specifications and anyone else's for that matter.
Right, right.
So that's why we provide that with the machine. So again, we've been very successful in the US. 6 out of 10 machines, that's pretty substantial.
And you have been successful with the type of cost of the nitrogen you have.
Exactly.
So you were saying that the US is like $8.8, right?
Right, 80 cents.
And in Mexico, we are like $6. So yes. We are talking about 8 times.
Right, eight times the cost. So it could be anywhere from, you know, 3 times the cost, 4 times the cost, to 10 times the cost. But that's the range that it falls into. No matter what side of that range you're in, 9 times out of 10, you can benefit from cutting with air.
I mean, my face maybe looks shocked. I was aware of this, but every time that I'm talking about this, I'm not able to believe that that's the case, but I know that that's the case. That explains a lot what I have seen, that Mexican customers still are not going. I know that budget is also a big portion of that too, but Mexican customers are not going for 6, 8, or 10 kilowatts on lasers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which has been proved in the US that it's more efficiency, it's more efficient system.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
But in Mexico still we are buying 6, 4, sometimes we sold a 4. I think is another reason for it is that cost of the nitrogen, because of course we have more power but we need more flow because mm-hmm. of the speed, so
yeah.
The nitrogen becomes even more needed. But maybe a lot of people doesn't know that cutting with air, if they actually don't need the shiny edge on the part, mm-hmm. same speed and yep. the quality actually of the cutting is the same as nitrogen, just a different color. Maybe a lot of people doesn't know that, so that's...
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we've, you know, in the early days, companies are, you know, trialing and experimenting, cutting with air, and the quality was not as good. Same thing, it was the case with us. Over time, we've developed it further and further to where now, edge quality-wise, we're essentially the same as cutting with nitrogen. Burr-wise, it's about the same until you reach the limitations of that machine for that material.
Sure.
But besides that, the quality is the same. In mild steel, you have a little bit of a darker edge. Stainless steel, it's a little bit more bronzing. On aluminum, there's no discoloration on the edge. Less burr on aluminum, better edge on aluminum. If you're cutting 100% aluminum...
Which is one case from our customers, Manufactura Salinas.
Right.
Right, so they are cutting, I think... Pretty much 100% of their production is...
Yeah, it's at least 80% of their production is
and they
aluminum.
Were cutting 3/4 inch, the thickest.
Yeah, 5/8, 3/4. I think 1 inch is maybe the thickest. So,
right.
And right now they're cutting that on a 6 kilowatt machine with air, not paying any money in nitrogen. And the thing about that is, if you cut thick aluminum, your flow rates for nitrogen, I don't care if you're using, you know, double nozzles or special nozzle techniques, you're going to use quite a bit of nitrogen. So the return on cutting with aluminum is through the roof, plus your quality, there's no drawbacks.
Yeah, there are maybe not in this market yet so many competitors capable of doing something like that. If you are cutting with nitrogen that kind of thickness in a fiber laser machine, I'm sure your pricing has to be very, very high versus having an air system and doing the same. A lot cheaper.
Yeah, if you're cutting with nitrogen, it's going to be very high. And that's where, again, cutting with thick aluminum, your flow rates are very high. You're also cutting with high pressure. Now, what is high pressure? High pressure could be anything from, you know, 190 psi to 400 psi. But if you cover 400 psi down, you're covering that thicker range of materials. And by thicker, I mean Let's say a 10 kilowatt, you can cut 3/8 inch with air. You know, from 10 gauge to 3/8, that's a big range. That's all with the higher pressure that we can provide with our system.
I was going to ask you, actually, what are the advantages that MESAC is introducing to the Mexican market, maybe, that are helping to our industry to get better? One of those that I can see is that to
right.
be able to use air just to produce more and better and faster.
Mm-hmm.
What others do you think that are good advantages that MESAC can provide to Mexican customers?
Well, to my point earlier, with the playing field being more level with automating systems and having 10 kilowatt lasers that cut so much more efficiently, I would say automation is another big one. And that's something where MESAC is very strong, not just because we offer automation, but we have so many different options for automation.
Right.
Everyone's different. You know, someone has a 10-foot ceiling, the other person has a 30-foot ceiling. There's different layouts. Someone wants to put it in a corner. Someone wants it in the middle of their facility. Someone wants the flow going in this direction. Someone else wants it going a different direction. We can offer conveyors.
And that has to be very clear, because you have seen with some business that we have done in Mexico, customers maybe don't know yet how capable we are with automation, how deep we can go with systems that can be adjusted to certain rooms.
Right.
As we are, well, you guys are a Japanese manufacturer, the size and the room that you are taking is important.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Japan, that's maybe the main thing, right? It's an island that has to be very efficient with space. So maybe I have seen that some of our customers, they don't know how far they can go with MESAC in that matter. So that's important for our customers to know, right?
Right, right. And, you know, Japan's a big adopter of automation because of space requirement. Sure. Other companies or countries, their labor is very high. So they need to automate so they're not paying so much to their labor. But don't wait until you're forced to buy automation. You know, plan ahead, think about the future, and think about the return that this investment will give you. You know, whether it's automation, whether it's high-pressure air cutting, whether it's our new beam shaping technology on our S-series machines. We're actually changing.
What about that? If you can explain a little bit, what's that, like beam shaping?
Yeah, so beam shaping basically is, not taking a finite beam at the cutting head and changing the diameter and focal point. We do that. We do that on several of our machines. We are manipulating the beam, the property that's already there, but beam shaping is changing the density and the profile of that beam. So with beam shaping, we can create different shapes for that beam. And not only can we create different shapes through an inner and outer core of the fiber, we can change the heat profile within those shapes. And with our proprietary cutting head technology that we've implemented with that, we definitely have a big advantage in cut quality with the S-series machines. So if cut quality is important, if you're a customer and cut quality is important, that's the machine to look at.
So it looks like the systems are more simpler in a way, right? Because the beam shaping, it's been done inside of the power supply, right?
Right, right.
And not as such complicated head, it's needed, right? It's
mm-hmm.
because it's already been done at the power supply, so it's delivering whatever the customer needs to have it, so to be able to cut fast.
Exactly.
So that's basically maybe the angle for that technology, right?
Yeah, definitely. That's a great point. We're taking lab environment technology, and we're putting it in the middle of a shop with the doors open, dust blowing through. We're not putting these machines in labs. So what a good thing about this technology is to be able to take a complex, you know, cutting head and simplify it by doing all the heavy lifting, if you will, at the generator. So now once we get to the cutting head, all we're doing is changing the focal point because we've got the beam characteristics that we want before it gets there.
Sure.
So from a service standpoint, your cost of repair is gonna be much less. You have less sensors, just less to go wrong with the cutting head on those machines.
Yeah, I know. I have seen with some other companies that they are like over engineering sometimes the lasers to be able to have different kind of shapes for every kind of material.
Mm-hmm.
Even technologies that seem to be too complex. We know that more elements into the chain of the beam delivery means more stuff maybe to go bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like what we are doing with this kind of approach for that technology. So, yeah.
Yeah, we've taken an already simple technology in fiber, you know, fiber technology, and we've simplified that even more. So
yeah, I'm glad. I'm just glad that we did that because we are not just putting crazy vibrating mirrors, right? With some other guys. Good luck with that. But no, it's fun that I'm really glad that we are going in that direction. Of course, that helps. More simpler systems also helps on the pricing of the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really good. Right now, and this is going to be maybe intricate question a little more, but right now, you know, in Mexico, and I'm maybe not so happy to say this, but in Mexico, the regulations are not clear for certain things, like that's why we have a lot of cheap labor, and that's why maybe still is maybe for some customers an option to have like 10 guys taking the shit from the whatever they are storing in to the laser instead of having just the automation system. But in Mexico, there are some regulations that are not clear, like maybe the safety for the machines and the users, you know, like, so we have seen more and more in Mexico, we are flooded with Chinese lasers, with other economies lasers that are open without any covers or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a thing that most of the customers believe that it's just a tale that is dangerous, right? To be operating lasers without those things. Of course, that is going to be a cheaper laser. You have less material, less thing to put together. Of course, it's going to be cheaper.
Yeah.
But it's a reality, right? I mean, that's why the machines need to be covered. The beam still is on fiber, dangerous to the eye of a human being, right?
Right, yeah, the wavelength of a fiber can damage your eyes. It can actually blind you. And it doesn't have to be a direct hit. It can reflect off material, off another object, reflective object. And if it hits your eye, it can blind you. So that's why it's very important to have a proper enclosure around the fiber laser. In the US, you know, we have OSHA, so if they walk into a facility and they see an open laser with no protection, that customer's writing a pretty big fine. So I think the regulations here are a little bit more relaxed. So
a little bit.
Customers are taking a little bit.
A little bit.
More risk. And, you know, it's because.
You're very kind with our regulations, you know?
Yeah. It's I know. Business friendly.
Yeah, I know. No, but so, it's a reality. And what maybe you can say to our customers that are thinking to maybe get, I'm not going to say any brand because I really don't want to be, maybe this is going to be censored. I don't want to be, but I'm not going to say any brand. But what you will say to our customers that are looking Chinese or other companies, cheaper machines versus our machines, what will be your advice? They haven't made any decision yet. So they're just looking at, they're thinking of it. It's, you know the pricing.
Yep.
I know the pricing. It's like, what, if you could, what would you tell them to think of?
Yeah, my advice, and you know, I can't tell customers what to do. You know, if I could, I'd have a lot more sales. But
sure.
You know, the advice I would give is to just do your research. Ask the tough questions.
Sure.
Ask about service. Ask where spare parts are coming from. Just know what you're getting, and Just do your due diligence, properly educate yourself, and that includes us too. You know, just because we are Mazak and we're a large machine tool builder, one of the largest in the world, doesn't mean you just say, okay, I'm gonna buy one. You know, do your research and challenge that group to provide the information that you need. If you want to see the part that you're cutting in your shop cut, send them a sample of your material, not something that came out of the showroom. See if they can cut it. See how the results come back. Video it. Get times. You know, all this information we can provide, and we're happy to do it because we know that's what customers should be doing.
Let's say that maybe that customer already took the great times 1,000 decision of buying a Mazak laser, right? What happens then? How can you explain how is the process of purchasing a machine from you guys? Like, how that happens? How is the process? What's the timeline for what they need to do? Like, can you, just a brief explanation of it.
They didn't have to buy a machine from us. There's options. Sure. So that's something that we do. We take personally, you know. We sell a lot of machines every year, but each one is personal. And, you know, I'm only responsible for a fraction of what happens in North America. But as far as the process of getting the customer ready for that machine, we have a pre-installation team that will work with the customer. They will send them all the pre-installation documentation, layout drawings, foundation requirements. And then from there, they'll go through the checklist, right? They'll let the customer look into that information, make their preparations, and then we're calling them to follow up and make sure that they have the proper, I would say, the priority tasks taken care of. You know, there's main things you can't install a machine without: power, proper foundation, assist gas. All of those things we're walking through with the customer. It doesn't matter how experienced the customer is with installing equipment. You know, every machine's different, and our customers have a lot on their plate. We can't expect our customers to be installation experts.
Sure.
They need a team to walk them through it, and that's what we do. So, again, we keep following up on timelines. We know when things need to be installed, so we're making sure to follow up frequently with those things. And then from there, machine arrives. Typically, I'm on site, or our distributor's on site, or we have a technician on site. And we just make sure that the customer's supported in that process. We do the installation. That's handled by an installation engineer.
Most of the customers maybe don't know, but Mazak Optronics is a dedicated company just for lasers, right?
Right.
So inside of Mazak, you have departments that are dedicated for each aspect of the support for customers, right?
Right.
I don't know if you can explain how that rolls into the maybe service or installs.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, when you're in sales process talking about speeds and time studies and all those things, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but in reality it really is. It doesn't matter what the speed of the machine is, what the price is. You need those two things to calculate your return on investment. That's really what it's all about. That calculation you've done doesn't matter if the machine's not implemented properly, if you don't have the proper support behind it to keep the machine running and running ideally and get your operators trained to the level that they should. And that's why we not only focus on laser technology only at Mazak Optronics, which allows us to specialize and to be more efficient in what we do, but we also have dedicated personnel for each department. And it's one of those benefits that comes with size. Just being a big enough company, we can dedicate personnel to different tasks and they don't have to be spread out across multiple different things.
Right.
So for example, during the installation, we have a dedicated engineer that only handles installations. So this person that's all he does every single week. And he becomes very efficient at it for that reason. Well, after the install, he's not the expert. He's the expert on preparing the machine, getting it up and running, not on the operations of the controls. That's our applications engineers who are in the lab, dialing in cut conditions, changing the assist gas flow and pressure and things like that to get the best cut quality. They're also doing our demonstrations for sales purposes to customers. Those are the experts on the control. And that's who we have handle the training for our customers.
Yeah, I think that's a very important thing. When we are talking that we have certain number of technicians for service, we are actually talking about laser techs for service, right?
Yeah, field service technicians that are going directly with their toolbox to repair your machine.
That's I think that's a really, really important thing. One of maybe just to kind of follow up from that the previous question is like, what are the right channels for customers to approach if they are having issues like with different kind of things on the laser? If I don't know, if, like for example, I don't know, like service, what did they need to do, or if their cutting is not well, what are the channels that they need to approach?
Right. So to the same point, you know, with our personnel not being spread out, you know, spread thin, we don't have that Swiss Army knife person to call. We've got specialized people for every single topic. And really, you can break it down into service, installations, applications, and sales. So that covers 99% of what a customer
would need. So whatever your machine is getting alarm, then you are contacting service.
Right.
If whatever the quality of your cutting is not right, then you contact applications, mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
Then...
And there's one number to call, so you don't have to... You call the number, you let them know the issue, and we'll triage you to the right person. Perfect. So you don't have to, as a customer, you don't have to think, oh, I need to call, you know, this person, or is this an applications issue? Is it a service issue? You don't have to make that determination. That's what we're here to do for you.
Which will be the faster way to like phone, like email, like what? I know that you are testing an app in the mm-hmm. U.S. right now for service. What for Mexico? What will be the best way to go now?
Yeah. So traditionally, it would be phone call. You know, there's if your house is on fire, you're not going to email the fire department. You're going to pick up the phone and call.
That is going to take some time, yeah.
Yeah, so that's always the best way to get service. It just depends on the issue and how quickly you need a response. But
what if the customer doesn't speak English?
If the customer doesn't speak English, we have...
Then you're screwed. No, just kidding. But no, what if that's the case?
No, we have Spanish-speaking personnel throughout all of our departments. So whether it's service, you know... sales, installations, whatever it might be, we have Spanish-speaking personnel in each department. Also, French-speaking personnel at Mazak, because we Mazak North America. We have a lot of customers in Canada, and there's a lot of French-speaking customers in Canada.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
interesting.
So we look at those things when we're hiring on a resume. We look for you know bilingual people to put in our staff, and We're very competitive with hiring. We have job fairs, and we really put an emphasis on hiring is not just as many people as we can, because we are hiring a lot right now, but we are hiring the right individuals.
Sure. Then, last but not least, how has been working with us, with Technica? How has been, besides eating some stuff that maybe is not common, but how has been your experience with us?
I mean, yeah, you make me eat really weird stuff, so I don't know.
Come on,
I guess it's bearable. No, it's great. I really appreciate the work that Technica has put in. Mazak, we're going to be the go-to for all those things we just mentioned, service, all of that. But Technica, you've geared up and you've really. I'm talking to you, Haciel, as the owner of Technica, have really...
Oh, please don't say that. I'm going to get robbed. So
everything...
He's kidding.
Everything is his fault.
No, I'm not... I don't have any money, all right? But no, keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, so I one thing I've noticed about you and your company is that you really think about the customer, not just on the sales part of the equation, but you're always brainstorming and thinking of ways to bring creative solutions to our customers. And you've brought some really good ideas. And you know, Mazak being a privately held company, we're pretty flexible. You know, we're a big company, but we can also react and take feedback from you, feedback from our customers, and really try to take that in and make improvements, because we are in our box over here looking at the world from this perspective. And we try to understand our customers, but there's nothing better to do than to get feedback from others. And you've brought a lot of feedback, and I appreciate that. And I think with that customer-centered approach, you will create really good relationships with our customers and make them feel supported.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Because I know that, and maybe that is what actually happens most of the times, like, customers are having some questions or some issues that maybe are not so big. They know that normally they contact us first, and then we just kind of find a quick solution, because new machines are getting more efficient, more not like old times when you have like a lot of mirrors and service was needed every year and refer for this, refer for that. Now it's more like a more easy, simpler service thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that what we are trying to do is just to... That's what we are kind of... I like this idea, and I'm glad that you were up to do this with us. Like, sharing what we know, just trying to bring what we know and the truth to the table, to the conversation, to the information to the customers, so they can make their own decision. You know how much I hate salesmen? I really do. This is not a joke. I really hate them all. And it's funny because I am one, kind of. But it's reality that I have been trying to change the way that we approach to customers with a more honest point of view and with more honest information about... I like what you said, and I'm going to take it. It's like, so they make the decision. They need the information to make whatever mm-hmm. is the best decision for them.
Yeah.
So... thank you for sharing this information. Thank you for the words that you have for Technica and for myself. Regardless the whatever jokes that I done to you, and I'm not going to share, not now. If you subscribe, maybe later, I can do that, but not now. But no, thank you so much for your time and for the time that we have The contact that I have with the company in the U.S. and also with the company in Japan has been all the time great. Like, for me, the experience to know you guys and to know the people at your organization has been great. And I just feel I feel that in Technica we are very proud of representing the brand in Mexico. And we just try the best that we can and just try to follow this kind of... angle and approach to have the right profile, not overselling anything, just trying to be direct with the customers with the right information. So thank you for your time.
Of course.
You have been great, and I swear I'm not going to make you taste that again.
Yeah.
So I will try. Maybe I shouldn't say I swear, but I will try.
I'll try the new mezcal. How about that?
That's great. We don't have now, but we will try later here. Maybe as we are in Guadalajara, we will try some new tequilas.
Yeah.
But we have to cut here. So, but yeah, thank you so much for this interview.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Asiel.
Great. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Tecnología para hoy, tecnología para el futuro.